Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. I'm Mark, your host.
And I'm Yucca.
And today we're going to talk about neat stuff about autumn, things you can do, things you can add to the environment of your home, things you can make, just generally sort of a grab bag of autumn goodies.
And some of them edible, some of them delicious and just fun.
Absolutely.
And general autumn, and also maybe some climate specific autumn things.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that's what today's episode will be about. But before we jump into that, we want to remind people that next May, there is going to be an in-person gathering in Colorado Springs, Colorado, called the Sun Tree Retreat. And we're inviting non-theist pagans, atheist pagans, folks that are curious or interested in those paths to come and join us and be with us for 3-day rituals and workshops and socializing and fun and dancing and all that kind of stuff. And we're really hoping that people will get their registrations in as quickly as possible so that we know how many people to prepare for. May sounds like a long way away, but hey, face it, it's almost October. It's not that far away anymore. So we will put a link in the episode notes where you can go and register and get all of the information about this. It's from the 13th, Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. of May through the 16th. And it's just going to be a really wonderful time. So we hope that you'll come and join us and take part in part of the fun. We'll be providing information to people about doing carbon credits to offset their travel impact, which is not super expensive, it turns out, which is great. And overall, we're going to do our best to make this an event that is as consistent with the Atheopagan principles as possible and as responsible to the earth as a part of that as it can possibly be. So please click that link, go take a look, and we really hope that you'll join us.
Yeah, we are just so excited to be able to invite you. And it's, you know, the closer we're getting to it, the more exciting it's becoming as so many different things are starting to shape up and, you know, it's just becoming real. And it'll be, right. I think it should be amazing. It's a beautiful, beautiful part of the world. And there's a lot of different options in terms of the accommodations, right? You could bring a tent and do that if you'd like in these beautiful ponderosa woods, but there's also different cabin setups and you can do more or less private and all of that. So all of those options that will be in the link below.
Right. So that is that. And if you're not there, you're missing out.
Yep.
Because we intend to have too much fun.
Mm-hmm. And we tried to make it somewhere that would be central to many folks. We know that there are Atheopagans and non-theist pagans all over the world, but we were trying to find somewhere that would hopefully be accessible to many different people. So, and maybe one day in the future, it'd be fun to do it in, you know, in another hemisphere, another continent.
Yes. And actually, there has been some talk amongst folks in Europe about doing some kind of a gathering around the same time. I don't know how far that's gone, but I think that would be a really cool thing to do. So there's that. And yep. Now let's talk about the autumn season and all of the cool things about it and things that we can do to make our homes ready for it, to exercise our creativity, all that good kind of stuff.
Right. And so we just had the equinox. And one of the things we talk about a lot is how different places are, right? Just from year to year, but also from simply where you are, where a few hundred miles or a few hundred kilometers over one way might be completely different. And so there's some things that we classically think of as being fall or autumn-y. And then there's things that are really unique to your specific place, your biological community. And I think we'll kind of get into some of both of those.
Yeah. For example, although some migratory animals, mostly birds, have already taken off to head for places that are more comfortable for them for the winter, or taken off to head back back to where they do their nesting during the summer, if depending on which hemisphere you're in, a lot of them are right now gathering up as much in the way of fat and accumulated calories as they possibly can in order to make those voyages so that they don't starve on the way. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether folks are aware of this or not, but migratory birds can lose 2/3 of their weight while they're migrating.
Yeah. Think about what they're doing. It's really amazing to think about a little creature and the incredible distances that they're traveling.
Yes. Yes. And they're doing that by flapping their wings over and over and over again to keep themselves suspended in the air against gravity.
Yeah.
Which is just awe-inspiring when you think about it. The fact that we have so many thousands of kinds of creatures that have all made this adaptation and are able to make it work. It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. So one thing that you can do at this time of year is you can put out bird feeders mm-hmm. and wildlife feeders. And you need to be very careful that the kinds of feed that you use are actually of use. So it's kind of like the old thing that I'm sure that you've heard, that you shouldn't throw bread to ducks, right? Because bread actually gunks up their digestive systems and doesn't provide them with a lot of nourishment. We have a Wild Birds Unlimited store in my town
too. Yeah, they have really good.
They really do. And everything from, you know, great feeders and really high quality feed, but also like spotting scopes and all that kind of stuff, everything for people that are birders. Mm-hmm. And so we just put up some bird feeders recently, one with sugar water for hummingbirds mm-hmm. and one with sunflower pieces, bits of sunflower seed for other kinds of birds.
And I'm sorry, continue.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of hummingbirds, there's a myth that you need to take the hummingbird feeders down to encourage the hummingbirds to go on their migration. And this is not true. They will go when they are ready to go. So you can keep those hummingbird feeders up and let them go ahead and drink and get the nourishment that they need. And they'll leave when they need to. So you don't need to stress about feeling guilty that you're preventing them from migrating. So
to know.
Yeah.
Good to know. Thank you. So since putting these feeders up, of course, we have had a lot more visits from wildlife. Yeah. We have a kind of really active sort of somewhat competitive community outside that are kind of wrestling over who gets access to the food. And so that's a wonderful opportunity for me to learn more about identifying birds and which species we have here locally and at this time of year. And all of that works really well for us as well. But the main thing is that I just get a good feeling about having provided this resource to these animals, that we've taken over so much of their habitat. It really feels like kind of paying back a little bit in that way.
Yeah.
And Yucca, you were saying also that you do feeding for other wildlife other than birds.
We do. Yeah. So we are in a rural setting. And so the part of the county I'm in, you can't have, you know, 40 acres. You can have one home per 40 acres, right? So it's pretty mm-hmm. spread out, and it's a much less dense than that typically. So we have all kinds of animals here. We've got the big ones and we've got the little ones, but now that we're here full time, they've figured that out too. So we feed a lot of different animals, and, you know, I've done my research to see what is healthy and what isn't for them. And so we put things out for our little mammal friends. We've got lots of chipmunks and squirrels and rabbits and things like that. And then we have many different kinds of birds who come to the feeders as well. So we'll do ground feeders and tree as well. And the most important one actually is the water, right? Mm-hmm. So even if you're worried about, oh, I don't want to give the animals something that, you know, might be bad for them, like corn is a really tricky one because there's some animals that it's just fine for and others it's really, really bad for. Sunflowers mm-hmm. typically are pretty safe in general if you get your, you know, your black oil sunflower seeds or something. But the water, everybody needs the water. And as long as you're keeping that clean, and that's really important with all your feeders, because you don't want to be spreading, right? The last thing you want to be doing is spreading diseases and hurting them. Right. But if you're keeping that clean and sanitary, that you can bring a lot of creatures in. And for us, we just get so much joy from it. And we've got some windows we can see through, and we have the, you know, our bird book sitting right there so we can go through. And I've lived here in this area my whole life, right? And have been tuned in to what animals, but I'm finding new birds that, like, oh, I didn't know we had those. And what's that? That kind of looks like a robin, but it's not. Or what's that one with the mohawk? And so it's just been so much fun. The other consideration, though, that one needs to always make is when you are feeding smaller prey animals, that does attract their predators too. So mm-hmm. you just want to be mindful about, okay, if you're setting up a feeder, are you making it really easy for those animals to get eaten, or can you put it somewhere that won't make it quite so easy, or that sort of thing?
Right. Right. Yeah. That's why bird feeders are usually suspended and hanging.
Yes.
Because the kinds of animals that are likely to go after them, like cats and coyotes and so forth, they can't get up to those heights. Foxes, yeah. The same.
Although you do have certain species that just won't visit those. So if you want to have those species come, then you want to put it out in the open and, you know, make considerations for that.
Right.
Yeah. And as we move into the colder weather, you know, it can be more and more important for the animals. And again, we're not trying to replace their wild diets, but just kind of give them a little assistance, right? Mm-hmm. Right. We've built our home where they would have been living and we've put our roads in. And so, you know, we can give a little bit back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's a cool thing that you can do. And it's a way that you can become better acquainted with what's going on in your local environment. And it can be a great addition to your non-theist pagan practice. Why don't we talk about the human environment now? Because I think it's true that it's sort of like children. You love all your children, but maybe there's one that just gives you particular delight. The same thing is true of our holidays. Mm-hmm. We love all our holidays, but there's something very special about autumn and Hallows, Samhain, Halloween, and all of that kind of spooky, creepy, mortality reminding, drawing down time feel of the season, whether it's, you know, the smell of piled leaves or the smell of smoke, hopefully from, you know, hopefully from somebody's wood stove rather than from a forest fire, which is what we're afraid of around here.
No, those are distinctive smells, though.
They are.
They really is, right? You know, it's very, we do campfires and we have all of them here. We get wildfire, wood stove, campfire, but even the same wood, it smells different in the different contexts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's that there's other stuff mixed in with a wildfire.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just wood. It's also, you know, aromatic herbaceous bushes and things like that.
It's all the lichens and the mosses and the,
yes,
the rocks being heated up to absurd temperatures and all of that.
And if you're in California, the houses and the insulation and the pipes and the electrical wiring and all of people's possessions.
Yes.
Which is awful, but that's what we're confronting now. So yes, they do smell differently. And I will be the first to admit that around here where I live, we're just getting a little gun shy about the smell of smoke generally.
It's quite understandable for the last few
makes
years.
It nervous.
Yeah.
It's been pretty intense. So. But that wonderful kind of faint smell of smoke in the air and the smell of rotting leaves, which mm-hmm. are falling, the beautiful foliage, especially in some parts of the country, but everywhere, I think, you know. Everywhere has something, you know, special and unique that's happening around this time of year. And it's just, it's kind of an emotional time of year, and I'm not sure entirely why, but there's just this sort of melancholic beauty to the drawing down of the season into its dormant phase. And I like to go for walks in cemeteries and collect leaves that have turned into gold or red or, and stuff like that. It's just, mm-hmm. it's all very enjoyable part of the year for me.
Yeah.
That and eating everything that has pumpkin spice in it.
Yes. Huge pumpkin fans over here. That's one of those things that I think should be in all the time food. But I mean, it's a half the year, right? Because pumpkins, we bred them to last really long.
Yeah.
Usually by about May, it's about the time that the Sun Tree retreat should be happening. That's about when the last of our winter squashes are running out. Right. That's how long they'll last. Uh-huh. But yeah, everything, the pumpkin, and then you add in all of those wonderful spices, right? The clove and everything nutmeg related.
And cinnamon and
yeah,
all those good things. Yeah, so, delicious.
Yeah.
I went to Trader Joe's last week and they had a pumpkin section. It was just everything flavored with pumpkin, and throughout the store there was really ridiculous quantities of stuff made with pumpkins, flavored with pumpkins. I'd never seen anything like that in previous years. They really went overboard this year.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things pumpkins work with, but maybe not everything. They do that with bacon too. They make bacon flavored everything. I'm like, I'm not sure I want bacon flavored ice cream, thank you.
Yeah, but I
pumpkin spice ice cream. That sounds like it's good. Got some I've potential.
I've had that. It's good. Especially the super creamy type, like gelato. Really, really nice. So
there's all of your pumpkin and gourd related kind of crafts. We were joking about how difficult it actually is to carve turnips. If you're going to do that, you might want to put your Kevlar gloves on to do that.
Yeah, you could really do damage to yourself. Turnips are very hard, and you can cut yourself a lot trying to hollow out a turnip and make a traditional Welsh jack-o'-lantern out of it. And at the end, what you have is kind of an ugly looking turnip with a face.
Yeah. That you just can't cut into them as nicely as the pumpkins that we've bred specifically for that purpose. But there are larger turnips or turnip related roots, like the rutabaga or rutabaga, which are like a better option if you want something larger to work with. And then after a day or two, though, once you've cut into them, you definitely want to throw it into the soup because they're not going to last for very long.
Uh-huh.
They'll kind of turn
there's
woody.
That too.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing about pumpkins that we've bred them for is not only to last a long time, but they've got that tough skin on the outside that keeps them from dehydrating quickly and turning into mush, which once they start to do, they do in a hurry. But, you know.
Yeah, and then they start dripping. You got to put a plate underneath them. Yeah.
Yeah. You can carve a pumpkin and it'll sit for 2 weeks and in pretty good shape, depending on the temperature where you are, of course.
Sure. And how much it directs sun or not, or all of that.
And whether a raccoon comes by and eats half.
Well, and the other plants, again, depending on your area, the real big sunflowers that folks grow in their gardens, those heads are drying right now. And those are just amazing to take and hang up and then actually later on, that's a great one to put out for the birds in the winter, right? Yes. Hang that dried from the tree, or if you have chickens, they'll love that, right? And just let them pick it out at it. And there's something so satisfying about seeing the bird attached to the head of the giant sunflower, just pulling and picking through which does it want and tossing the ones it doesn't want on the ground. And then, you know, fighting with the other bird that comes by because they're very drama-filled little creatures.
Uh-huh. So yes, all that wonderful gourd art, and that's not only with pumpkins. I mean, bottle gourds are also the dried bottle gourds, and you can use like a keyhole saw or a little tiny hand jigsaw to cut holes in them, or you can make them into rattles and shakers, which are great for ceremonies, great for accompanying percussion, drumming. You can dance with them. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can do with a gourd rattle.
And even just leaving them plain, right? Not cutting into them. They're just amazingly beautiful shapes and colors and sizes. Yes. Yeah.
For sure. If you decide that you want to make a gourd rattle, the easiest way to do that is just to dry the bottle gourd until you can hear the seeds rattling around inside. And there's your rattle. That's easy. Mm-hmm. But if you decide you want a sharper or louder sound, dried corn works really well. You know, you cut the top off and put in the dried, take out the seeds, put in the dried corn. And what's good about that is that if there's any extraneous moisture, it'll absorb it and then slowly sublimate it, and your rattle will last. Mm-hmm. And you can seal that hole with wax, or, you know, put a little plug of the material that you took out into there and then seal it around with wax, and it works really well. If you want a really soft sort of oceany kind of sound, sand works really nicely.
Ooh, yeah.
Makes a really sort of shh, 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 shh kind of sound that's very pleasant.
Nice.
I say this as someone who once planted bottle gourds and then for a 5-year period had more bottle gourds than I could possibly do anything with, because they seed themselves and then they just come back and they come back and they come back, and every year they produce more.
Pretty good plant to have, frankly. If you're going to have a plant that's taking over your yard, then that's a fun one.
It is.
So, yeah.
And the seeds are quite tasty. You can do the same things with them that you do with pumpkin seeds. Mm-hmm. You can roast them. I like to roast them with the soy sauce. Gives it a sort of a umami and salt flavor to go along with the fat and crunch of the seeds. Mm-hmm. And that's another autumn thing you can do. After carving the pumpkins or doing whatever you do with the gourds, you can make those delicious seeds.
Now with the plants, this would be spring or early summer activity, but the flowers, depending on the particular variety, you can also stuff and fry those. And those are really good.
Oh, squash blossoms. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're good.
So
that's a very Southwestern thing.
I suppose it must be.
I think it's a Mexican thing, actually. I think it started out as a Mexican thing, but it's become characteristic of the Southwest.
Well, this is New Mexico, so there's a lot of, you know, the Europeans have been here hundreds of years, so there's a lot of overlap between the areas. So
for sure.
So in the home, right, we've been talking about kind of the crafts and the sorts of things, but there's also some of the shift in just the types of colors that we can have, or the smells, especially in the kitchen, if you're making some of those, you know, delicious sort of spiced foods. So having the smell of cinnamon and clove and things like that in the house. And if you have like one of those oil diffusers that you can just put on and kind of have that smell, is, I think that's really special, because we forget about smell and touch and things like that as senses, because we're so focused on vision, which makes sense. We're very visually dominated, but vision and sound, but also all of the rest of that just influences the way we feel day to day, and kind of makes it, adds to that specialness, that exciting feeling of the autumn.
Yeah. And I think that there are symbolic things that we can put around as well, even before we get to the real Halloween season, when it's your spiders and spider webs and skeletons and skulls and caracoles and all the, you know, and gruesome monsters, if that's the direction you go. I'm not so much in the gruesome monster direction as that. I am just
I like skulls though.
Oh yeah. I like the memento mori stuff, the remember you're going to die and we're all mortal stuff for this time of season is really important to me. But in my experience, the scariest monsters are humans. And you know, the rest of the stuff out of fiction is not just doesn't really scare me very much.
Yeah.
It's not very interesting.
But you were saying before we get to that stage of the fall, of the autumn, the end of autumn.
Right.
We have this early autumn.
And there's that color palette, you know, the rust color and the, you know, black and rust and maybe a dark gold, all the sort of autumnal palette that we can use to decorate our house and make it feel as though it's prepped for the season. I know that a lot of people use cinnamon brooms at this time of year, which are, I mean, originally, I think the cinnamon brooms were actually made out of cinnamon trees, but now they're just sort of brush brooms that have been dipped in cinnamon oil. And, you know, you wave one of those through the air and it makes a gorgeous smell to kind of fill your house for a long time. And they can be quite strong. So you may want to actually store it outside and just wave it around inside once in a while.
Maybe consider if you have pets in the home that they may be much more sensitive than humans are, right? Like, yes, a cat or dog.
Very true. Very true. The other thing that's coming, and we'll talk about this as we get closer to Hallows, to Samhain, is that the days are shortening now, and it's evident. Where I am, it was dark at 7:30 last night, and that's a long swing from the, you know, 9:20 at night that it was back at the summer solstice.
Yeah.
So it's a really good time to actually go out and watch the sky. For one thing, and I've never entirely understood why this is, autumn sunsets tend to be really spectacular. Maybe it's just the weather patterns where I happen to live, but they seem to last longer. And they're very, very colorful. And so if you don't already have a practice of going out to watch the sunset, you might want to take some time in the next couple of weeks to do that a few times and really enjoy what the sky has to offer.
Yeah. Well, they should actually be longer, independent of the weather, just because longer than they would be in summer because of the tilt of the earth, right? So your sunset is going to be, you're getting those beautiful colors because of the angle that the light is traveling through at.
Yeah, but
you should get that.
I don't think of winter sunsets as being so much longer. It seems like a bigger jump for some reason. And I'm sure that this is just my perception, that it's not really true. But it just seems like there's a big downshift that happens from the summer into the autumn with the length of the sunsets.
Are you less comfortable standing outside for the winter sunsets?
It depends on what the days are like. We have 70-degree days here in the wintertime.
Okay, yeah. But many places, those autumn sunsets, you know, I've heard that, I certainly noticed them here. They're very different here depending on the time of the year. We always have really beautiful sunsets, although monsoons seem to be the most spectacular ones. And I think that's the way that the light is hitting off of the just huge clouds and all of that. But there's just always a very different quality depending on the time of year. Mm-hmm. And right now, Jupiter and Saturn are both really, really prominent in right after sunset in the southern sky. Even if you're in it, you're going to be able to see them. Right. They're so bright.
Oh, super bright right
yeah.
now. Yeah.
So you look out after sunset to the south and you're going to see a bright, what looks like star. That's Jupiter. Right. Even if you're in, say, Manhattan, as long as you can actually see over the buildings. So maybe not. Maybe from the top of the building. But yeah. So there's that outside component. And if it's safe to do a little fire where you are, or maybe even just bringing a little candle out, right? Uh-huh. Have a little candle and have that on your little table as you watch the sunset and the transition to the evening. And if you've got the time staying out, we're moving in for the Northern Hemisphere. We're going to be moving into a time where we can see the Milky Way in the evenings really beautifully. And so you should, depending on where you are in terms of light pollution. You should be able to see it all year, but it just depends on how late you want to stay up or how early you want to get up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess the kind of the summary of this is embrace the season. This is a particularly witchy time. It's a time that we kind of wait for. We in the pagan community, we wait around for it all year. It's a time when the symbols and the aesthetic that are promoted in the mainstream culture come more into alignment with the sorts of aesthetic that witchy pagans use. Often. With our bones and skulls and spider webs and just cool, spooky, occultish sort of stuff. Plus, of course, all of the natural stuff, the beautiful leaves, the beautiful sunsets, the kinds
acorns,
of things that we
if you
really
have
appreciate.
Them.
Oh, boy, it's a big acorn year here. Acorns are what they call mate producers, which means that they don't produce a crop of acorns every year.
Hmm.
Oaks will only produce all that fat if they've got enough starch accumulated in their roots at the time that they need to start producing acorns for them to make a batch.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a huge year. They're everywhere. It's really remarkable. I've been surprised because we're in a drought,
mm-hmm.
but it may be that stress on the plant is encouraging it to create more reproduction.
And do you have multiple types or species of acorns and they all will seed at once, or does it kind of depend on the species?
Every oak tree that I've seen of and we probably have eight species here, but the vast majority are about three species.
Mm-hmm.
And every oak tree that I've seen here this year is just heavy with acorns.
Mm.
So it seems to be something that they've agreed upon that this is a good year to do that. So that'll be good for lots of kinds of creatures, mice and rats and squirrels and so forth.
Yeah. Oh, how fun. So yeah. You could collect a few of those and have them inside.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yep. I've already done that. I have some on my focus, my altar. And starting to think about wrapping up the year, we'll be talking more about that. But I have items from Sabbath rituals that I've done around the course of the year that I'll be burning at Hallows that are starting to lose their urgency in my mind when I look at them. They're starting to fade in their power, as things will as time goes by in many cases. Those sort of temporary items, like we did a ritual at the spring equinox in which we wrote plans or wishes for the coming year cycle, mm-hmm. and then folded them into paper cranes.
Hmm.
And so I will be unfolding mine and reading what those were so mm-hmm. I can reflect on what those plans were and how they turned out, and then refolding it and putting it in the Hallows fire when that time comes. Yeah. It's a good time to be a pagan. Autumn is, and whether you're in the north or the southern hemisphere, we wish you the very best of the season.
And thank you, Mark.
Oh, thank you, Yucca. Always good to talk with you. We've got some cool episodes lined up coming up soon, so we look forward to seeing you then. And be sure to check out that link about the Sun Tree Retreat, because we'd really like to see you there. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening.